Hello and welcome back to Hacker Slacker. I'm Jacob Petticord.
And I'm Andre Garive.
We got a shorter show for you this week. We're recording it a day late. We just kind of got slammed with a bunch of assignments, but now that we finally have some breathing room, we have a lot of news we're going to cover today.
Yep, life of college students.
Yep, and then next week we have a really good show coming up for you guys. We have an interview with Derek Marr from Pathrise. It's a YC company about, and what they do is they're basically a accelerator for college students trying to find tech internships. So this week our episode's going to be a little lighter, but get ready for that big show next week.
Yeah, so we've got actually quite a few news stories. So we haven't gone all that much into the news in the past few weeks, but now we have a lot of really good news stories, and I'm excited to talk about these.
Yeah, I don't know if we're just playing catch-up or if there was just a lot happening in this last week, but there's been a lot of interesting things going on.
It did seem like every other news alert I got this week was about tech, which is weird because the midterm elections happened this week too. So you'd think you'd get a fewer percentage of tech news stories, but I actually felt like I was getting tech news all the time.
Yeah, there was actually a lot of tech news about the midterm elections. Like a lot of the ride-sharing companies were offering free rides to the polls, a bunch of stuff like that.
Kept seeing. It was interesting because there was really good turnout too. So it would be interesting to see how much those affected turnout.
Yeah. Maybe people have like interesting like data reports on that kind of thing afterwards to see how effective that sort of stuff is, but it was kind of cool just like seeing. I feel like this is like, maybe it's just now that I'm old enough to vote, but it seems like this has been the most like prevalent election day for like midterms in a long time.
Absolutely. My social media was swamped, and I had been planning on voting. It's the first time I could actually vote in an election, so I had been planning on voting for quite a while, but I felt like some people I knew that I wouldn't have thought would vote were voting, that was probably a really good thing.
Yeah. So one of the companies that was offering like a special election day thing, I think, was Uber. I think they were offering like discounted or free rides to the polls.
I know Lyft was offering free rides.
Yep. And like Lime was doing the bikes, but Uber's actually the subject of our first story this week. They are resuming their self-driving car testing. So you might remember earlier this year there was an accident where a self-driving Uber car fatally injured a pedestrian as it was doing its tests. And that was a situation where, because the driver was just used to sitting there and letting the car do its thing, it didn't react quickly enough when a pedestrian came out of the dark, and it ended up in a tragedy. So now they're resuming that self-driving car testing. They said that the previous test or the previous accident happened because it failed to trigger the brake earlier, but that's something that they say that they've dealt with, and they're accounting for the employees having a slow reaction time by doubling the amount of employees in the car. There'll be two employees, and instead of just a certified driver, they'll be certified for this type of testing. So it seems like they're moving in a positive direction with this sort of thing.
Yeah, I mean, all of what Dara's been doing has been, in my opinion, positive for Uber. Their image has definitely been getting better, especially since late 2016 into 2017, with the whole scandals of employee treatment and Travis Kalanick and just all of that that kind of created an avalanche against Uber. And I really think Dara Khosrowshahi has been a really good CEO for them because he knows how to run the company.
Yeah, he's definitely been projecting a pretty positive image about the company, which is something that they really needed. And so with this kind of comeback in self-driving, it'll be interesting to see how the race, like who ends up getting there first, like the driverless taxi service. Waymo says that they are going to launch their commercial self-driving taxi service later this year, which is crazy. Waymo, if you don't know, is the Google subsidiary, and they're kind of ahead of the game in the self-driving car industry right now.
Yeah, so when I was at the Google campus this summer, I saw Waymo cars all over the place. You just like look around and there are cars just driving by themselves around the campus. You're like, oh my God, that's ridiculous. Why are these cars just driving themselves? And then you realize, wow, they're getting a lot of test data just by driving it around all the time. So even in like the city of Mountain View, there are a lot of self-driving cars just kind of going around. And it's crazy because here in Lincoln, Nebraska, if you saw a self-driving car, 30% of the town would be trying to follow it.
Yeah, I think that the three big players in the self-driving car game right now are obviously Google and Uber, and then also Cruise, which is it's a startup. I'm pretty sure it's backed by GM, but like they're the other big leaders in terms of like developing self-driving like cars, and like plugging those into existing cars. And then there's some other approaches like Comma AI has a thing where you can plug in your Android phone into your dashboard, and or it's not like your Android phone, it's a special Android device that they make, and it'll kind of like plug into your car's onboard computer and steer it based on its camera in the phone, which is crazy, like using just straight video going out the front. But yeah, so it's definitely an interesting space right now, and it'll be cool to see how it ends up. And in my opinion, it'll probably be in the next year, 2 years, when we start to see like something commercial happen.
Yeah, so one of the most interesting things for me is that Google is one of the companies, or rather Alphabet, in the best position to create this self-driving car ride-hailing service, taxi service, whatever you want to call it. They have Google Maps and Waze, which allow people to get around super easily, and that can be done completely natively. They have Waymo, which is leading the charge in self-driving cars, but they don't have a ride-sharing service yet. Back in February, when Waymo had sued Uber over some proprietary technologies being stolen from them via an employee being hired away, they had reached a settlement immediately, and that lawsuit was supposed to take years. So I remember when that happened, I even tweeted it out, is that settlement happening so quickly made me feel like some sort of merger, buyout, whatever was imminent.
Like they were in cahoots.
Yeah. But what's interesting is Uber's going public next year. So Uber is obviously trying to be self-sustaining and be themselves. And I think Lyft is also going public next year.
And we just talked about how Lyft's valuation is like almost a tenth the price of Uber's, so maybe Google could acquire Lyft to get that like ride-sharing infrastructure that way.
So if you get that together, then I think they are really in the perfect position. But I thought a buyout was imminent as soon as they settled. I didn't know if Google was going to buy Uber, if Google was going to buy Lyft or something like that, but it definitely seems like a space that Google will buy themselves into soon.
Yeah. Okay, so our next story is also about Google, and it's actually a pretty unique case where my mother actually knew more about this story than I did, and I kind of had seen the headline, but then she explained it to me, like, what was kind of going on, and I was like, oh, wow, like, this is actually kind of a big deal. So I'm sure my mom will be super proud to hear that she beat me to a tech story. But yeah, so it's about the Google employee walkouts. Around 20,000 employees have, last week, around 20,000 employees staged a walkout worldwide across Google's different offices. And it was because of this New York Times piece about Andy Rubin. And it was kind of about how Google handles situations where people are accused of sexual assault internally, especially among their execs. People were upset because in their view, they kind of gave these CEOs like a pretty soft treatment, or not CEOs, but the execs. So like Andy Rubin, if you don't know, he was the creator of Android, and he left Google and formed Essential, another smartphone company. And yeah, when he left, he got a $90 million bonus. And that was one of the things people were upset about, because it later came out that he left due to like credible allegations of sexual assault or sexual misconduct. So, it was a pretty big movement, pretty big headline in the tech news. All of these Googlers upset about the way that the company was handling the misbehavings of their execs.
Yeah, so one thing I know about Google is that internally a lot of the employees are not afraid to call out the company, which I think is a really good thing for corporate culture, is that employees won't be afraid to say what's wrong, and then the company can change and do what's right before things even get public. But then you get to something like this, where they are giving $90 million severance packages.
Yeah.
To,
I think that's the most extreme case.
To executives who have been credibly accused of sexual harassment and sexual assault. And that's, it's ridiculous. And one of the things is, I'm a man. I haven't ever had to worry about that. I feel pretty safe pretty much everywhere I am. But, and I also, like, when I was at Google, I didn't see any of that. I wasn't aware of anything, and nothing happened to me. But I see that oftentimes, because I'm a man, I'm a lot more blinded to what can and is happening.
Yeah, it just doesn't really cross your mind a lot of times.
Yeah, and there were moral protests internally about certain technologies that maybe Google should or shouldn't be working on, but I had never heard anything about that. So reading this is just kind of disappointing, because you see that all of these people have come forward against this executive, and just because that person's an executive, they get to walk free with $90 million and go make their own company.
Yeah. I mean, you hate to see it, but if you look on the bright side of the way these employees are reacting, it's not something like Uber, where the culture is no one really speaks out against it, and no one notices the problem until it becomes such a big problem that you're in the news and you get a thing where you have to oust the CEO. You know, at least, like, the employees feel empowered enough to give this feedback.
Yeah.
That's definitely a good sign. So what the employees want is to add transparency around the way the company deals with sexual harassment reports, and to improve the wage gap. So that's, two things that I'm sure that they're definitely going to be very receptive to hearing after all of these protests. So hopefully some good forward progress there.
Absolutely.
Our next story is one of the sleeper stories from this week. I thought it was really interesting. Out of left field, 7-Eleven launched a new way to use some of its stores cashierless. So you've probably heard of Amazon Go, where you can go into one of these stores and they have cameras on you. You scan in with your Amazon app and you can grab items off the shelf and walk out. The cameras know what you picked up and then it charges you when you leave. I've been to one of these. I'm pretty sure you've been to one of these.
Yeah.
And it's a pretty seamless experience. And a lot of people are looking at it as the next big retail disruption, is this sort of added layer of convenience of not having to interact with the cashier, not having to swipe payment, anything like that, all of it being done in a smart way. So 7-Eleven actually found a way to do this in some of its existing stores. And the way that they did it is using your existing 7-Eleven app. If you're in a store that has this feature enabled, there'll be a new section on the app where you can scan an item that you want to purchase and then just walk out towards one of the exits and then scan your phone to prove that you purchased that item and then leave, which is not the same way that Amazon does it, using cameras and just kind of knowing when you've purchased something. It's a little more involved, where you actually have to scan the items yourself and then, like, go through these checkpoints at the exit to prove that you purchased them. And you can't buy food, tobacco, alcohol, or lottery tickets, but the 7-Eleven people are saying that they've had a lot of success.
Yeah. So, obviously, hot food you can't scan, and then tobacco and lottery tickets and alcohol are all things that you have to have identification for. So that makes complete sense. So I think this is awesome. As the most iconic convenience store in America, 7-Eleven has made themselves more convenient, which just kind of makes sense. And I really appreciate that they're embracing technology like this.
Yeah, it might not sound like a huge deal, but what the article said was that the most inconvenient part of retail, according to surveys of Americans, is the line, which, that totally makes sense. You go into the convenience store, takes you like 30 seconds to pick up your stuff and then another 2 minutes to wait in the line. Like, what if you could just handle all that process yourself, go in, go out, that sort of thing. And then another big factor of this, which kind of makes it, it's their competitive advantage right now over the Amazon Go stores, which are also kind of like convenience stores when you think about it. Mm-hmm. They have a bigger variety of items, but it's kind of serves the same purpose, get in, get out, is that 50% of Americans already live within a mile of a 7-Eleven.
Yeah, so that's crazy, because in Nebraska, there aren't 7-Elevens. So
yeah.
I grew up as 7-Eleven being something I heard about, but had never been to. And then this summer, I lived two blocks away from a 7-Eleven, and I went there a few times. And I was like, oh, hey, this is pretty nice. And when I was in Seattle a couple of years ago, I went to 7-Eleven every once in a while. So
yep, I lived within a mile of a 7-Eleven in Kansas City, actually. They have those in KC. But yeah, it's pretty impressive, the network that they already have, especially when you think about Amazon Go's goal right now, I think, is to build like 3,000 stores over the next few years. 7-Eleven already has those stores. They just have to work on, if they're really going to go in on this, is converting those stores to have this cashierless feature, which the company is saying that it's going to cost a franchise around $100,000 for this conversion. But I wonder how that math plays out, like how expensive that is versus Amazon's approach versus like what that cost really is to a 7-Eleven franchise owner. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see how it plays out.
Yeah, and I mean, it's definitely better for consumers. If I just want to walk in and grab a sweet tea and a bag of Chex Mix, I can just grab those, scan my phone, and then go. Like, I don't have to worry about anybody who's trying to wait to buy things in line, doing anything like that. I can just grab what I want and go, and I don't have to talk to anybody.
Yeah, it seems super reasonable. I'm not 100% sure how the checkpoints at the exits work. Like, if it could become a thing where now everyone's just waiting in line at the doors to scan their phone to prove that they paid. But if it's a smart solution, then this could be really cool, and it could be a model for other stores to kind of follow their lead.
Yeah. And so, speaking of convenience, Amazon is trying to get more convenient for consumers during the holiday season, and they've announced free shipping for the holidays.
Yeah, no minimum purchase for this. So whatever items you're buying for the holiday season, I'm not sure the details on exactly when it starts, but the idea is around Christmas time, free shipping store-wide, which is kind of crazy when you think about the volume that they deal with. This is in the U.S., but when you think about the volume that they deal with, they're giving up a lot of profit doing this.
Absolutely. But they are trying to compete with like Walmart and Target, and then also brick and mortar stores where traditionally getting gifts is instant. And Walmart now has free 2-day shipping for everything without a membership. So they are trying to compete there. What's interesting is Amazon can just bleed money all the time.
That's true. Yeah. I mean, that's kind of what they're famous for, is doing a bunch of like loss leading activities. And this one is kind of coming at a necessary time because their stock actually recently just took a hit when they announced their earnings. They were reported lower than expected projections for this holiday season. And the holiday season is one of Amazon's most profitable times of year. So investors were pretty concerned about that happening, wondering why that they would report lower earnings. But this is probably a strategy to boost those numbers back up.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. Because a lot of people I know will be getting gifts off Amazon, but then they'll be like, oh my god, I don't have Prime, or this item isn't Prime, I can't get this shipping. And then it takes 3 weeks to ship, but they buy it in mid-December, and it just doesn't work for them.
Okay, so next we're going to talk about Amazon's plan for HQ2, something that's been in the news a lot this year.
Yeah, so ever since they announced the search for this, I've been super interested in trying to figure out where it was going to be, and I would say by maybe, I don't know, May or so, I was convinced it would be either New York or D.C., and turns out I was right on both accounts.
Yeah, so they're actually, it's almost like Amazon HQ 2 and 2.5. They're having it in two different locations. They're going to split it up.
Yeah, so I've talked about them before, but there's a NYU professor named Scott Galloway whose YouTube videos I watch, and he was talking about when a giant corporation makes a new office, it's all about where their CEO wants to spend more time each year. So you look at places like Louisville, Kentucky, or Detroit, or Miami, and places where it wouldn't quite make sense for Bezos to want to be spending a ton of time there. But New York and DC makes a lot of sense. Amazon's biggest block in becoming an even bigger company in the next decade is going to be legislation. So if they're in DC, they have a much easier route to lobbying to politicians and making themselves a bigger factor in politics and being able to not have quite as much regulation on them. And then also New York, because Bezos likes New York. New York's a great tech city. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see what the actual effects of these are.
Yeah, one interesting point of view is that some people are saying that a lot of Amazon's publicity around HQ2 has been to try to drag out tax benefits and more benefits for the company. And some people are saying this decision to just have two headquarters will drag that out even further. So now that even as they're building the headquarters, deciding how they're going to allocate, make which one bigger, they can make the two cities continue to compete for each other.
Yeah. It's kind of not a great thing for them to do because they don't need the tax benefits. They don't pay taxes in the first place. So it'd be nice to see them not be draining tax benefits for like schools in DC by trying to get tax cuts. But it's going to happen because companies want them to be there.
Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see like which areas they pick, because I'm sure there's a bunch of like people who are in real estate right now trying to decide which apartment complexes are just going to blow up because now all of a sudden they're a block and a half from Amazon and those prices are all going to skyrocket. So it's kind of impressive the effect that a move like this has on the cities that it occupies.
Yeah. And what's weird is they're not even moving their main headquarters. It's not like they're picking up from Seattle and going somewhere else. They're just building another HQ2, and it's going to be massive.
Yeah, the move to New York makes a lot of sense. I was in their offices a couple weeks ago in Seattle, and their entire campus is in a few skyscrapers. So it's kind of unlike a lot of the other tech campuses. If you go to Google like you were, or Facebook, or Microsoft, it's like kind of corporate parks where you have buildings that are like no more than like 5 or 6 stories, and then it's kind of spread out across the campus. But Amazon, it's like just several skyscrapers, and your team's on your floor, and the other teams that you need to talk to are on either your floor or the floors right above or below you. And it's kind of a different way of doing things, and they'll probably continue that style in New York.
Especially in New York.
Yeah, have something totally different in D.C. because you just can't have skyscrapers there, but yeah.
Yeah, I would be interested to see how much space, because they, we say D.C., but they're going to be in Arlington, Virginia.
Yep.
Basically D.C. So it'll be interesting, too, because of the college recruiting that'll happen. There are a lot of good schools in both New York and D.C., so I'm sure there'll be more interns and more employees coming out of colleges like that, and then more interest in going to those universities.
Uh-huh. So we'll probably have more follow-up about this next week or the week after that when this becomes official, because it's just a pretty strong rumor right now. But now we're going to move on to our last story. This is definitely the craziest story of the week. It totally caught me off guard. Samsung unveiled a foldable smartphone prototype.
Yeah, so I got the notification. Samsung has announced their foldable smartphone, and I laughed because I was like, "That's not real."
Yeah.
I guess it is. It's a prototype. I'm looking at it. It's kind of like a phone, or rather a tablet that folds both ways, so you can fold it with the screen on the outside on both sides. Or you can fold it from the back, and then a screen pops up on the front.
Yeah, so the way the demo worked was they actually turned off the stage lights in the room because it's a prototype display and it's not bright enough to be seen in regular lighting. And the executive on stage held up a really chunky brick-looking phone with a small display. Yeah. And then he kind of grabbed it like a book and opened it up, and on the inside there was a bigger display that folded out, and he folded it flat, so it was almost like you have your one screen on the outside and then you open it like a book, and then on the inside is a bigger screen that's kind of like the tablet mode.
It's kind of like an iPhone 4 that unfolds into a first generation iPad. It is really clunky.
Yeah, I don't know, it's just kind of crazy. So when you look at the specs of it, the screen on the outside is kind of crappy, kind of small, but I mean, that's really the secondary screen. The real screen is the one that's inside the device. And when you fold that open, it's 7.3 inches, so it's more iPad mini territory. It's not like ever going to be your serious computing device. Like, my current iPad's 10.5 inches, and it's like pretty cramped when I'm trying to do multiple things at once. So I'm just really wondering, like, what their big use cases for this is going to be.
Yeah, I understand this is the beginning of a technology that maybe in 10 years we see it's just a screen that folds open and shut, and then that's it. It's just a piece of glass. that would be something I'd be interested in. I doubt they'll ever sell anything like this. Nobody would buy it.
Yeah, and the crazy thing I think about this stuff is that we've been hearing about these flexible displays for, I think, the last 5 years. A couple years ago, there was this demo where someone just had a smartphone that was like, or is a prototype showing the flexible screen that was just the screen part of it attached to like a computing unit, and like they could like shake the screen and it would bend up and down.
Yeah.
So these like flexible OLED screens have been in the work for a while, but they haven't really seen many uses. One of the uses is they have TVs that are kind of, it looks like a box on the bottom, and then the TV rolls out of the box vertically and it can roll back down into the box because it has a flexible display. And that's like, I don't know, that just doesn't really seem to justify all this hype and work that they put in to make these bendable displays.
Yeah, it's almost like we've saturated our own knowledge of technology, that now we're just trying to do weird stuff that people didn't think we could do as a species, like making a TV that rolls up or a phone that folds in half. But like I said, this is definitely a future-facing idea, prototype. It looks so gross right now. It really, it does not look good. The concept is cool, and that's about all I can give to it.
So the funny thing about you saying that this looks gross is the day before this event, there was actually a company from China that unveiled technically the first foldable display device.
Yes, I did see that.
And it was even grosser. So it was kind of similar, except when you folded it all the way out, there was still a little hump in the display. Like, it didn't actually fold flat. It was like if your phone was like a piece of paper, and then in the middle of it, there was a ridge, which is just crazy.
Yeah, so it was almost like a hinge made out of screen.
Yep. So I don't know. In my mind, I can't really imagine the killer use case for this. It's not going to be a tablet replacement. Maybe the cool thing will be having two apps side by side. But when you think about it, you're going to have to put in one screen that's twice the size of a normal screen on the inside to fold open, and then one screen on the outside that's the size of a regular screen. And it just seems like there's going to be either enough sacrifices to where your regular screen's going to be crappy and it's going to be weird to have to fold open your phone all the time, or this is just going to be the most expensive phone ever because it's doing so much more than just a regular phone.
And obviously this thing is way too thick for anybody to use at this point. It's just ridiculously big. It'd be cool if my phone could just get bigger after I take it out of my pocket, but that's not how I'm looking at it.
Yeah, the only thing that really makes me take this seriously is Google says, yep, they're going to support it with Android features.
Yeah, I did see that.
This is going to be something that they're going to let developers develop for, so I don't know. They're definitely taking the build it and they'll come approach, where we're just going to put this crazy technology out in the world and hope developers have cool ideas. We've seen that work before, like with the iOS App Store that took off and iPhones took off. And then we've seen it maybe not work as well with the Watch App Store, where we haven't really seen any real innovation that from that App Store justified the product, in my opinion. So,
yeah,
I don't know. It's an interesting strategy, and it's a crazy piece of technology. So, I don't know. Don't see enough weird smartphones anymore. This definitely gave me my weird smartphone.
Yeah, last year, or maybe even at the beginning of this year, we had that one phone that had the camera that kind of popped out.
Yep, that was sweet. Uh-huh.
That was a unique one, because then they can do no notch, no bezels. And then the first time we saw the fingerprint
sensor in the screen.
In
yep.
the screen.
Yep, this is definitely the wackiest thing I've seen in a while, though. So, I don't know. I was happy to see it. It's crazy, but I'm going to kind of need to see some use cases to justify its existence.
Absolutely. All right, so I actually did want to tack on one more news story that I had seen earlier today on Twitter, and then I actually just saw it here linked in that last foldable phones article on The Verge, was that the Chinese state-run press has created an AI anchor based off of one of their own anchors that speaks in English. So I'm interested to see what the implications of this are. Have you heard about this?
I have not. This is the first time seeing it.
Yeah, so I saw it on Twitter earlier today, and I was like, oh, well, that's neat. And then it's just like, it's like a guy talking, and he's speaking in English. And they said the voice and appearance are based off of one of their own anchors. But I'm not completely sure what they mean by it being an AI anchor, because if it just talks, that's not AI. So I'm wondering what that actually means.
It sounds like a very interesting propaganda delivery vehicle.
Yes.
I mean, if anything else, they're gonna, I mean, that's super Orwellian. You just have your fake anchor kind of delivering your propaganda on multiple screens, on multiple stations, 24 hours, telling you what the government wants you to hear. It's pretty classic China, but it's a pretty cool use of technology as well.
Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see that. But the thing is, I would think the reason they're calling it AI is that they have this body programmed that will change facial expressions and speak based on what it's saying. But I'm not completely sure what actually makes this AI. So we'll see. So a fake person reporting fake news is about as 2018 as we can get.
Yeah. And the underlying technology that I'm assuming is behind this is actually been one of the more interesting technical developments over the last few years, is the kind of using machine learning to make a new video from existing video. So like compositing, probably what they did with this anchor is made him make a bunch of facial expressions and then built up a library that then they could then feed words to and make it look like he was saying it with different pronunciations and different expressions on his face.
Yeah, because earlier this year we had that whole controversy over deepfakes.
Yep.
Where you could basically put anybody's face on any other person doing anything else.
Yep, and that combined with Adobe demoing a product where they could take, I think it was like 45 minutes of someone talking, and then from there just let you type into your computer and have that person's voice say whatever you just typed.
Yeah.
So all of this stuff is definitely kind of amping up the fake news arms race.
Yeah.
But this is definitely an interesting use of it to deliver that news in the first place. So yeah. I don't know, trying to keep being crazy.
Yep. All right, so like we said earlier, we don't have any deep dives today besides just talking over these news stories, but they were actually pretty interesting this week, and so it's a bit shorter. We've been pretty busy. Next week is going to be really great. Hopefully we'll get it out on Thursday. I might be able to even get it out by Wednesday because we'll be recording a little earlier for the interview, and I'm really excited for that one, and I'm sure Jacob is too. So anything else?
Nope, I think that's it. Join us next week for our interview with Derek Marr. We'll see you then, and thanks for listening.
All right, bye.